Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We announce a major poll of 12,000 registered secular voters, hear from secular Puerto Rican students,
then talk with British professor David Nash about his latest book,
Acts Against God, A Short History of Blasphemy.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Nearly 2 million babies are stillborn every year, or one every 16 seconds, a figure that could worsen due to the COVID-19 pandemic, according to a new UN report. Most stillbirths, or 84%, occur in low-income countries, but high-income nations also face this challenge. Losing a child at birth or during pregnancy is a devastating tragedy for a family, said Henrietta Fore, executive director of the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF. Many of these deaths could have been prevented with high-quality monitoring, proper antenatal care, and a skilled birth attendant, she added. UNICEF issued the report alongside the World Health Organization, WHO, the World Bank Group, and the UN Department of Economic and Social Affairs. The partners warned that a reduction in health services due to COVID-19 could cause nearly 200,000 additional stillbirths over a 12-month period. 11 rescue boat workers in Italy who save lives in the Mediterranean should be applauded and not criminalized, a UN independent rights expert has said. Mary Lawler, UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights Defenders, has condemned ongoing proceedings against Carola Rakata, former captain of the Sea Watch 3, and 10 crew members from another rescue vessel, the Juventa. Italian authorities arrested Ms. Rakata in June 2019 for docking her ship with 53 migrants on board without permission. The country's Supreme Court ruled earlier this year that she should not have been arrested. However, Ms. Rakata continues to face charges and risks 20 years imprisonment as well as up to €50,000 in fines. The Juventa 10 case goes back to September 2016 when a criminal investigation was opened against some crew members. Charges included aiding and abetting in the commission of illegal immigration, a crime which can result in 5 to 10 years in jail and a €15,000 fine. A motion to dismiss the preliminary investigation was filed in June 2019, but the decision is still pending. Ms. Lawler, the UN expert, said these human rights defenders should be commended for their efforts to save migrants and asylum seekers at sea. As many as 16,000 lives have been lost in the Mediterranean since 2014, according to UN Migration Agency, IOM. The price of several staple food items, such as vegetable oils and cereals, hit multi-month highs in September, the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, has reported. The UN agency publishes a monthly index that tracks the international price of the most commonly traded food commodities. Last month, the index averaged nearly 98 points, up more than 2% over August and 5% higher than in September 2019. FAO said new forecasts for global cereal output, as well as stocks and trade, all point to well-supplied markets. The cereal price index stands at 13.6% higher than this time last year, led by higher wheat price quotations. Meanwhile, the vegetable price index rose 6% in September, reaching an 8-month high, bolstered by rising quotations for palm, sunflower seed, and soy oils in line with firm global demand. Diane Penn, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. Imagine
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome to Free Thought Radio. And that, of course, is Johnny Nash, who died October 6th at 80 years of age. The New York Times obituary said about this song, "It's going to be a bright, bright, sunshiny day has become embraced as a modern-day spiritual for a secular culture." There's a little tiny reference to a prayer in there, but I think it's a lovely song, and I think although today happens to be a bright, bright, sunshiny day while we're recording this, most of us, I think, are looking at this as hopes for our post-pandemic future.
As some optimism.
Yes.
And I'm Dan Barker. This is the October 8th, 2020 edition of Free Thought Radio. Annie Laurie and I are hosting this show from our Stay Safe at Home studio in Madison, Wisconsin, while, once again, Buzz Kemper is engineering the show from Audio for the Arts, his recording studio near the Wisconsin State Capitol. And Buzz, many of you know Buzz, is a well-known voice talent as well. He played the voice of God in my book, God, the Most Unpleasant Character. Can you give us a word of greeting, God, there? Is your microphone hooked up?
Hello, I am Buzz, not a God. Hello, Dan and Annie Laurie.
Well, you're known as kind of a voice deity in this industry, so thanks for doing such a great job.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From, I like to emphasize that, Freedom From Religion Foundation, which works to keep religion out of government and also to educate you, the public, about the views of us non-believers. So whether you're religious listening to this or you're a free thinker, we hope you'll enjoy learning more about the free thought movement and, of course, separation of church and state. FFRF can be joined at our website, ffrf.org. The times are getting rather critical here for the separation of church and state, for the use of reason in our social policy, not magical thinking. We'd really appreciate your support at ffrf.org.
One of our favorite sayings here at the Freedom From Religion Foundation is, "Blasphemy is a victimless crime." During the second half of today's show, we're going to talk about blasphemy. Our guest will be David Nash. He's the author of the new book, Acts Against God, A Short History of Blasphemy.
David Nash is an Oxford professor who's one of the world's leading experts on the history of blasphemy and is actively campaigning for the repeal of blasphemy law. So he's not just a scholar, he's an activist, and we'll be talking to him from the UK.
From the UK today in just a few minutes. This week we're celebrating four birthdays of composers and songwriters who were not religious. John Lennon was born October 9th, 1940. The Italian composer Giuseppe Verdi was an outspoken atheist. He was born October 9th, 1813. The jazz pianist and composer Thelonious Monk, who did not believe in God, was born October the 10th, 1917. And this is appropriate for today's guest, the British composer Ralph Vaughan Williams, a lifelong atheist, was born October 12th, 1872. Listen for music from each of these composers during today's show.
And by the way, we are producing a wall calendar of the history of freethinkers that features the birth dates of all these famous people we talk about, and many, many more we don't have time to talk about, that we glean from our website, Free Thought of the Day, which is ffrf.org/day. So you can look forward to that. We'll tell you more about that later in the year. And Free Thought Matters is our weekly TV show. This is our weekly radio show. We don't have an audio excerpt, unfortunately, but Linda Greenhouse was our wonderful guest. She is the foremost expert on the U.S. Supreme Court. She covered the Supreme Court for the New York Times for more than 30 years. She still writes weekly, biweekly columns. You often see her on the editorial pages of the New York Times, and she gives us some very cogent and I think somewhat alarming analysis of the direction of the U.S. Supreme Court, recorded prior even to the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but the warnings were still coming out loud and clear when we recorded that show. You don't want to miss it. She's a lovely person and erudite scholar on the Supreme Court, but so accessible.
So we can see it on Sunday mornings.
You can see that in about 27% of the country we are on Sunday mornings, but it's already up on YouTube. So just look for the Free Thought Matters playlist And Linda's an author of many books on the Supreme Court, on the law, and is an expert on Roe versus Wade. And in particular, we spent quite a bit of time talking about the imperiled future of Roe versus Wade.
And Linda Greenhouse's op-eds and columns have been so effective that it has often been referred to as the Greenhouse effect.
Yes.
Whenever she would do that.
Yes.
So last Friday, on October 2nd, Eric Trump was a guest on the radio show What's on Your Mind? It's a right-wing radio show, obviously. And during that show, he said that his dad, President Donald Trump, has saved Christianity.
And look what he did. The greatest economy this country's ever seen, the record low unemployment. He fixed the military. He's protected the Second Amendment. He's literally saved Christianity. I mean, there's a full-out war on faith in this country by the other side. The Democratic Party, the far left, has become the party of the quote-unquote atheists. They want to attack Christianity. They want to close churches. They're totally fine keeping liquor stores open.
Okay. So first of all, FFRF is a nonpartisan, apolitical group, but there is no party that caters to atheists. So we wish. Secondly, it is not an attack on, you're not trying, nobody's trying to close churches when there are gubernatorial or other mandates about how many people can come to a live event during a pandemic, or about masking. This is what he's talking about. You know, yes, some places allowed, of course, grocery stores and liquor stores to stay open for very quick trips. Churches have been super spreaders, just like the rose garden of many coronavirus epidemics here. And so really ridiculous.
And look how many evangelical pastors have died from COVID, including just recently Pastor Hagee, a very famous, well-known, he was in his 80s. Caught it and just died.
And many of them have spoken out against social distancing and masks who have died. So so apparently the Christian God that Trump believes in actually made him sick. Trump has claimed this week that God infected him with the COVID virus in order to showcase the effectiveness of experimental drugs. Last night, Trump made a video address to the nation claiming that the coronavirus was a, quote, blessing from God.
They gave me Regeneron, and it was like unbelievable because I feel great. So I think this was a blessing from God that I caught it. This was a blessing in disguise. I caught it. I heard about this drug. I said, let me take it. It really did a fantastic job.
So magical thinking and blessing from God. So what else do we need to say about that? I guess not much. So, turning to things that are more rational, let's talk about the billboard that we put up.
So, in Tennessee, we have another billboard in the Knoxville area. Undeterred by COVID-19, FFRF, along with the aid of its local chapter in the Knoxville area, has put up a billboard on Route 62 in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. It's a multicolor billboard that says, God and government, a dangerous mix. Keep state and church separate.
It's red, white, and blue.
And it went up two or three weeks ago. It'll be up until at least October the 12th. It's the latest in a series that we've been erecting around that city. And we want to thank the East Tennessee chapter, including the president, Alida Ledendecker, for making all of this happen to educate the public about the importance of state church separation.
Yeah, and in the press release that we put up, I was quoted saying, we have seen the dangers when religious views or magical thinking have supplanted science during the pandemic. So very topical.
So now, really important news. We talked about it yesterday on Ask an Atheist, and there's a press release up on our website about a major national survey that the Freedom From Religion Foundation has conducted of its members. 32,000 members at the time, and how many responded?
Yeah, we're up to 33,000 members now, but we surveyed our members between June and August, and over 12,000 of them responded. But what makes this extraordinary is that 98% of them are registered voters. So our membership survey, Dan, turned into a major secular voters survey. Now, I suspected that because 5 years ago when we surveyed our members, we did ask about registered voters, and 97% of them were registered. So we included a whole series of questions on hot button issues in topics that we don't always ask our members about that are sort of outside our quote-unquote mission. Some of them are related, but many of them are not. And it's extraordinary. And we have to say that Hemant Mehta did a very nice blog about it in his Friendly Atheist blog, where he said it was the wildly progressive. What we have found is that the secular voters are 20, 30, 40 points ahead of the general public when you survey them on controversial, timely issues of the day. And we do find that most of our members are older. The average age is 64, so they're registered voters, and they do vote. We also ask that question. And they're also highly educated. So these are people that that public officials and candidates should be wooing. And we did some charts.
What about on some of these hot-button social issues? How do secular voters compare to Americans on abortion rights, for example?
Well, 75% of Americans do say they support Roe versus Wade. So that's very high. How many of our members and secular voters? Almost 99%, 98.8%. This is very meaningful because the Freedom From Religion Foundation got its start because my mother, Anne Nicole Gaylor, the primary principal founder, was an early abortion rights activist, and that's what opened our eyes to the harm of religion and government. So obviously, our other members and secular voters realize we don't want religious dogma in our law. There's really no reason to oppose abortion except for religion. Ditto, marriage equality, 61% of the general public, 98.9% secular voters. Medical aid and dying, 78% of all Americans, which is still very high, 99% of secular voters, 99.2%, Dan. Oppose the death penalty, 68% of secular voters compared to 39% of the general public. And even things that are outside our purview, like gun safety laws, 94% of secular voters support them compared to 60% of all Americans. And Dan, maybe you would like to take us to going over some of the civic, economic, social policy issues.
Well, so 98%, as you said, of our members of our survey are registered to vote compared with 79%.
Of Americans.
And universal health care coverage, the country, 66%, two-thirds of the nation support universal health care coverage.
Which is it's still really high.
It is. 94% of our survey. Guaranteed minimum income. This was surprising. 45% of the general public, 70% of secular voters.
And we're talking about a poll of 12,000 people.
Across the entire country, yes.
Yes, huge. It's a national poll.
It was quite a job to tabulate this. Free or reduced public college tuition, what was that? 58% of the general public, 83%
and
of
this is a fairly
survey.
New concept, and that surprised me. And then we also, I mean, we did other questions as well, but racial, police, statehood issues, many surprises there. The general public, 76%, agree with the statement that racial discrimination is a major problem in the U.S., kind of a no-brainer, 96% of secular voters. We asked about slavery reparations, which is something of great interest to me. 45% of secular voters, it was a plurality, another high percentage, so almost 20% or so, weren't sure. They just wanted more information. So it was not hostile. But of the general public, only 20%. So you can find out more about this survey at fffrf.org/news. It's significant. We need public officials to cater to our views. And when we come back from the break, we are going to talk about some of the winners of the our Puerto Rican essay competition. And we also have a piece of good news about a new lawsuit in South Carolina.
And after that, we're going to talk with David Nash, author of the new book, Acts Against God, A Short History of Blasphemy. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. We're back. We were just talking about the national survey showing that secular voters, the non-religious voters in the United States, are the true values voters.
And we're going to talk about our Puerto Rican essay competition. But first, we want to give congratulations to Attorney Skylar Hutto and the plaintiff in a significant case. We had Skylar on recently to talk about his challenge of the South Carolina governor's decision to direct $32 million in federal pandemic relief funds for students only to those attending private, mostly religious schools. And yesterday, the South Carolina Supreme Court ruled against the governor in favor of this lawsuit, stopping this grave miscarriage of justice of huge amounts of taxpayer money going to benefit private and religious schools at the expense of public schools. So congratulations, Skylar.
So the Freedom From Religion Foundation is really happy to announce that it is awarding, in partnership with Humanistas Seculares de Puerto Rico, which is the Secular Humanists of Puerto Rico, more than $16,000 in cash scholarships to Puerto Rican students, including 10 major winners and four honorable mentions who wrote about keeping state and church separate, and they wrote their essays in Spanish.
So we have comments from two of the major winners.
We had a Ask an Atheist show recently where we were able to interview Fatima. The first place winner was Fatima Rosado, and she told us part of the story that prompted her winning essay.
So basically, my essay is about a situation that happened to me in 11th grade. My school decided to take us on a field trip, and they didn't really tell us where we were going. And when we arrived to the place, we just found out that it was in a church. I remember some teachers told us that it was mandatory our presence in this field trip. So we got inside the church, kind of freaked out because it was a church and we're public school students, which was really, really weird. So we got inside the church and the people helping with the whole kind of lecture thing told us that we couldn't get up and we couldn't use our phones. And all of a sudden, the lecture was about abstinence act with God, but it was not really mandatory. It was not really, if you didn't want to do it, you shouldn't do it. But it was hundreds of students, and you actually felt pressured to do it. And then they started talking about abortion and how it was a sin, how it's illegal in Puerto Rico. Abortion is legal. And then they gave us abstinence certification because we made a pact with God. And then when it all ended, they gave us fetuses, doll fetuses. It was horrible.
Wow.
They told the teachers that it was only a field trip. They didn't really tell the teachers that it was that type of activity. They only knew that it was mandatory. And so when it ended, we kind of went to the teachers and they were like, why would you took us to a church? And they were like, we didn't really know.
Huh.
So, yeah. And then some of the students threw it to social media. Some of the students took pictures and videos. And then after that, they were kind of harassed around the school and around social media and by other peers in school. It was really, really hard for us. In a really, really uncomfortable situation for all of us.
So that's Fatima Rosado. She's the first place winner of the Puerto Rican Secular Essay Contest for students going on to college. The second place winner is Roberto Rodriguez, who lives on the far east side of the island. We also talked with him on Ask an Atheist. And Roberto's connection to the internet wasn't the greatest, but his concern about keeping government and religion separate is very strong.
So my essay had a different approach, which was that oftentimes we say, well, they're a fundamentalist sector, but we never call them out because, so my approach was to call them out and to say, you know what, is the Christianism the ones who are trying to, they want to break the state and church separation. And so I just said it. I said it, you know, it's Christianism and we need to fight because that separation is the one that ensures that all humans are able to express themselves freely. And that is something that is not happening in my school. And it's something that I believe that these organizations are the ones that are doing the hard work. And I deeply congratulate them for having the initiative to go to court and defend people who are defenseless. Because, like I said, there is a huge majority of Christians here. And fine, it's only Christians who are trying to go to church and do their thing, and that's it. But no, they want to spread their message illegally. And that is where it becomes a problem. So I think that it's very important to create essays like the ones I did and the ones that all of the consultants created. But not only that, we have to go out there and make our voices heard and understood that this has to stop. People would think that it's not a big deal, but there's a lot of people that don't believe in what you believe, and you're trying to choke your religion down their throat, especially at school, which is supposed to be a place to get
educated.
That was Roberto Rodriguez. It's really encouraging to hear these young people in Puerto Rico who are so concerned about issues like state church separation.
Yes, and so Fatima got the first place prize of $3,500, and Roberto got $3,000. Then there were 10 major winners going all the way down to 10th at $300, and then we had 4 honorable mentions given $200. These essay competitions, this is our 6th, are made possible thanks to the members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation who care about the future of free thought. So we're working very much with students around the country, including now Puerto Rico.
Here's a little bit of Verdi. Verdi's Aida Grand March. Verdi was an outspoken atheist through his entire life. So I'm Dan Barker. After the break, we're going to talk with the author David Nash on the phone from England about his new book, Acts Against God, A Short History of Blasphemy. I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And as we said a few minutes ago, one of the favorite sayings around the Freedom From Religion Foundation is, blasphemy is a victimless crime. That's one of our, I think we had a bumper sticker with that on it.
We had a t-shirt with that on it, too.
So we're going to talk about blasphemy today. David Nash is professor of history at Oxford Brookes University. He's been researching, lecturing, publishing on the history of blasphemy and blasphemy laws for 30 years. He's the author of Blasphemy in Britain, a book called Blasphemy in the Christian World, and his new book is called Acts Against God, A Short History of Blasphemy. He has been an advisor to a number of governments around the world and NGOs on blasphemy law and the issue of repeal. So, Professor Nash, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a great pleasure to be here to talk to you.
Oh, I really love your book. It's just quite informative. And you say it's a short history, but it's quite packed with information. But let's just start with the basics. How do you define the word blasphemy?
Well, I suppose one of the things I really wanted to do with that book is to actually show how the definition moves and changes. Because one thing that has always struck me over 30-odd years is how adaptable the concept and laws pertaining to blasphemy actually are. I sort of said at one stage it's the willful use of derogatory language or actions that question the existence, nature, or power of sacred beings. But at other times, people see it as seeking to mock God, seeking to claim God's powers for yourself. And of course, if we move into more modern times, it becomes much more about protecting the religious feelings of other people, which is the big thing that enables blasphemy and blasphemy laws to survive into modern times.
So who is the victim of blasphemy then, under both of those definitions?
Well, again, that's another thing that shifts, and that's a very important aspect of the history. Initially, it's seen as God himself is the victim of blasphemy, and you can see evidence of this in the Bible. But equally in the ancient world, people argued against this. It was the Roman Emperor Tiberius who said, if the gods are offended, it's up to them to take revenge. It's nothing to do with mankind at all. But increasingly in the modern world, we see that it's individual religious believers see themselves as the victim of someone writing or broadcasting or publishing something that they consider attacks their identity or their conception of religion.
So, David, you have written, you write in this book, in your new book, Acts Against God, that blasphemy, as a crime, appears to be primarily generated by the Abrahamic faith. Now, that's something I didn't realize. Could you talk more about that?
Well, yes. I think what's interesting to note is that the Abrahamic faith have a conception of one God. Where you have religions that have conceptions of more than one God, then blasphemy is much, much less important. It's also interesting to note that some religions that have a conception of God dispersed throughout creation and the universe don't have a conception of blasphemy at all. And indeed, they consider the idea of blasphemy itself a blasphemy, if that tautology works. But the Abrahamic faith are also faiths of a book, which also leads to disputes in creation of things like heresy and blasphemy. The big change in the modern period is as we, to an extent, slip away from having a close knowledge of our religious texts, we move to this idea of religious feelings as things that are under assault from people who speak or write against them.
Now, what made you become so interested in this whole question of blasphemy that you basically devoted your career to studying it, David? What woke you up to the dangers?
To be honest, my career started as a historian of freethinkers and freethought in England. And a publisher suggested to me that there wasn't a decent history of blasphemy, and it's that sort of happy accident, which you then discover that many of the people who very clearly, obviously, been involved in free thought writing, free thought agitation, are also some of these people who are prosecuted for blasphemy.
That's
so
right.
So the two go together.
I mean, was Charles Bradlaugh ever prosecuted for blasphemy?
No, he was not. They attempted to prosecute Charles Bradlaugh, but as you almost certainly know, Bradlaugh was a very, very adept lawyer who could sidestep these attempts to ensnare him. But these attempts to get at Bradlaugh inspired George William Foote to blaspheme in his newspaper, the Freethinker, which published a Christmas number in 1882 with a comic life strip, depiction of the life of Christ. And Foote himself was so indignant at how Bradlaugh had been treated that he was quite happy to have his day in court, although he wasn't especially pleased with the verdict that found him guilty and threw him into prison.
Well, and here we are with Charlie Hebdo trial going on so many years later. Same idea, huh? Only a little bit more deadly.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Very terrorism.
So why do you think, here we are living in a supposedly enlightened, more progressive time, why do you think blasphemy laws are surviving into the modern time?
Well, I mean, one thing I did try and point out in that book is with the coming of the Enlightenment, you start to get the conception of the individual, which one of the things that does do is it starts to remove some of the providential and theological explanations of the universe. And part of that is about creating the sovereignty of the individual. But the problem with that is when you create the sovereignty of the individual, you also create their ability to believe what they like. And the Enlightenment thought it was going to secularize the world and universe and did not necessarily do so. So you might say that the tools of blasphemy, or rather the edifice of blasphemy, was dismantled by the Enlightenment, but it certainly wasn't destroyed. And it was arguably there to be put together in new forms in later periods when the Enlightenment ran out of steam.
Well, because human beings still have these feelings of insult and dissatisfaction when somebody challenges their precious beliefs. So maybe that's never going to go away, is it?
Well, I'm conscious that we move away from them having out-and-out religious beliefs to what we might call religious feelings. The other thing that's interesting is how many countries see blasphemy laws as some sort of comfort blanket that stands in for laws to protect morality. And it was interesting that I noticed this fondness for having something to do with blasphemy on the statute book when I was involved in some of the work recently to repeal the blasphemy laws in Ireland.
Yes, and well, thank you for your work on that. How many, do you know approximately how many countries have blasphemy laws?
It's changing all the time. Sometimes you can get a sense of what's going on. What we might see as the pattern now is that you see a number of Western liberal countries are removing them. If you think of the roll call of the last few years, it's gone in Ireland, Denmark, New Zealand. But equally, other regimes are recognizing the power of something like a blasphemy law to basically regulate the beliefs of people within their jurisdictions, and as a method of marginalizing minorities. And it's actually a number of religious and Christian minorities that get marginalized by some of these new laws. Indeed, this was why the hierarchy of the Catholic Church in Ireland wanted to see the back of blasphemy laws in Ireland, because they set a dreadful world precedent, and other countries are actually actively using them to oppress Catholic missions in the Far East.
And we should give a shout out to Michael Nugent in Atheist Ireland for all of their work, and I think
Jane Donnelly.
Jane Donnelly, maybe the Asia Bibi case in Pakistan, which involved an illiterate Christian woman, I think did raise the international consciousness.
Yes, and I mean, that particular case was also very very informative historically, because it made me think of witchcraft cases of the 17th century, because so many of those break out over domestic squabbles. And the Hachibibi case, the same thing happened. It was a squabble between women over something fairly trivial. And you get to a stage where you press the nuclear button to escalate the quarrel, and you lash out and accuse people of blasphemy. And you also see people accused of blasphemy for over land disputes or disputes of access to boundaries or access to a water supply. And again, very reminiscent of what used to happen in the 17th century over witchcraft accusations.
Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to take a break. We want to talk more, I think, about what the Hebrew scriptures actually say for blasphemy, and also go back into the history of blasphemy, such as in ancient Greece and the medieval world.
And also, Professor Nash, also you have said that there are a couple of actually non-religious arguments in favor of blasphemy, and I'd like to hear what those are. We're talking with David Nash. He's the author of the book Act Against God, A Short History of Blasphemy. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. We're back. We're continuing our conversation with Professor David Nash. He's the author of the new book, Acts Against God, A Short History of Blasphemy. So, Professor Nash, would you consider yourself also to be a blasphemer?
No, I've never consciously done so. I have been accused of it on a radio program, but I've not consciously felt I have been, which is one of the important things that it's often said blasphemers always intend to offend and upset people, and that isn't always the case.
So during the break, I was asking you if you're a free thinker, and why don't you tell us again what you said?
Yeah, I actually said I don't use the word freethinker about myself, nor the word humanist, which is used a lot in England. I would describe myself as an atheist.
And that's what a majority of the members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation say, too. Although we do like that term free thought, because when you look it up in the dictionary, it isn't corrupted by religious definitions.
Just like your countryman, Ralph Vaughan Williams, called himself an atheist, that music that we just heard. So in your book, you say that blasphemy is primarily a religious crime, although some governments or societies have tried to give non-religious arguments to bolster blasphemy laws. What are some of those arguments?
Well, you can go right back to the sort of dawn of Orthodox Christianity when Constantine the Great got interested in having a state religion. It's seen as something that makes the state more secure if you believe what the ruler believes, although the logic of that is a little simplistic in many respects. But if you come forward to modern times, there are people who see some blasphemy laws as successfully mediating between squabbling religious groups. One of the big examples of this was the creation of blasphemy within the Indian Criminal Code of 1857. But that sort of worked, in inverted commas, because it was a colonial power overseeing two religions, which neither of which it particularly respected. And it never ceases to amaze me how the Indian Criminal Code regularly gets held up as this magnificent paragon of tolerant laws, when in many respects it isn't. Coming further forward to more modern times, people suggest the creation of hate crime laws is something that ought to incorporate many of the ideas associated with blasphemy laws, that they're controlling people's assault upon the belief and identity of others. And, you know, one of the arguments against that is to say, why does religion deserve this privilege when other forms of behavior or other forms of identity are not necessarily protected in this way? Which has, of course, moved hate crime forward into there being laws against homophobic crime, laws against anti-trans crime, laws against anti-disability crime. But the danger with the religion... Sorry.
Oh, isn't but aren't blasphemy laws almost crimes against thought?
They are almost crimes against thought. They're crimes more fundamentally against expression. Mm-hmm. Because you have to actually have a moment of offense. You have to have someone who is confronted by something that they consider objectionable and blasphemous. And in terms of dark figures of crime, we don't know how many people were stopped from saying or publishing what they actually wanted to by blasphemous intervention. It doesn't even have to be laws. Mike Nugent told me regularly that he would be told what he could and couldn't say before the microphone was turned on.
Huh. Mike, are you talking about Michael Nugent in Ireland?
Yes, Michael Nugent in Ireland,
Go ahead.
Sorry?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
They would have discussions before television and radio interviews where they would say what he was allowed to say and what he wasn't. And,
wow,
of course, no one ever hears that.
And that brings us to Stephen Fry, the famous episode of blasphemy in Ireland. Could you recap that?
Yes, basically, Stephen Fry was on a chat show in Ireland hosted by Gay Byrne, who was a very famous chat show host. And he was asked the question about what he would do if he were to actually meet God. And Stephen Fry said, well, you know, I would rail at this pathetic individual for creating bone cancer in children. Basically, what Stephen Fry did was to express the classic problem of evil argument against the existence of God. And there were complaints in the Irish media, and someone in Dublin made a complaint to a police officer in a police station in Dublin, and the police considered whether they would do anything about this, and fairly wisely, they decided they couldn't follow the theological arguments. They couldn't take action on this, and they sort of rather hoped it would go away. And the person who complained to resurrect this. But eventually nothing ever came of it.
But it did draw attention to the law.
Except apparently the chat show host claimed he had to go into therapy for a while after this exchange on film.
Well, that might have been good for him.
Yep,
I heard that that they were saying that they could not prosecute under this law, not because it was a bad law, but because there just weren't enough people complaining, implying that the blasphemy law would still be valid on the books, which was one of the things that Atheist Ireland was pointing out. They needed to get rid of that whole law.
Yes. The whole law was badly drawn up. I have heard it described as something scribbled hastily on the back of an envelope. when it was introduced to Parliament, the legal secretary... minister, his own party didn't know it was coming, and they were flabbergasted by its provisions. Ostensibly, it didn't have a good definition of a significant number of believers being offended. There were other things in it that were very strange. There was a suggestion that you couldn't claim defense under the blasphemy law if you were a cult or an organization that used brainwashing to get religious adherence.
So isn't that all religions, indoctrination?
Well, someone pointed out that in Ireland that could actually encompass the Catholic Church.
I just realized that I blasphemed. I said, geez.
Geez, yeah, you said you took the Lord's name in vain.
That's right.
Well, we just have less than a minute left here, Professor Nash. I love your book. It's called Acts Against God, A Short History of Blasphemy. You go back into blasphemy and censorship in the Greek world, in the Hebrew scriptures, and you bring it up into the Reformation and up until the modern day. It is a great book to give an overview of the problem of the whole idea of blasphemy. So thank you so much.
Yeah,
any parting words here?
It was my hope to basically produce a popular history of this. I've done academic books, but I wanted this one to reach out.
Well, you have devoted your career to trying to educate about the harm of blasphemy laws, and it's such a vital topic today in today's world where you see so much harm and persecution. So thank you so much.
Great, Professor. Thank you very much.
David Nash, Acts Against God. And we want to thank you, Buzz, again for producing the show, and you listeners in Philadelphia to WOOM, you listeners in Madison, Wisconsin to WMUU and WIDE, in southern Wisconsin to Janesville Community Radio, WADR, in central Texas, KEOS, in central Missouri to KOPN, in Vermont, New Hampshire to WOOL Black Sheep Radio, in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York, WRFI. And thank you for listening to the podcast, you many 6,000 or 7,000 regular listeners. And give us a thumbs up on your provider. Tell your friends to find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And of course, Free Thought Radio is just one of the many media and campaigns produced or published by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the United States' largest association of free thinkers, atheists, and agnostics working to keep religion out of government. So check us out at ffrf.org. Ask for a sample of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope so.